Hey, hey, hey.
Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. Today I have with me your other host, Eric.
Hello.
And your other host, Carl.
Hello.
And today's topic is the Christmas special of Doctor Who.
Yay!
It is not the Happy Holiday special of Doctor Who.
It's twice upon a time.
Twice upon a time. So, normally you would listen to Doctor Who talk on Eric's mostly harmless cutaway, if I could not slur my words. But we're going to do like a brief discussion on Doctor Who just for the Sci-Fi Party Line. But you probably hear us talking about it there as well. So is it mostly harmless? What's the URL? We'll put it in the show notes. No need to spell things out.
Just Google it. It's better than the URL.
Yeah. Yeah. Mostly harmless cutaway. All right. So, Christmas special. It's been a long time since we've seen the Doctor. The Doctor has changed ages. I don't know. I want one of you guys to set this one up.
Well, Eric is the man. You got to do this. You're the who.
Well, I mean, again, it's been months since the preceding episode to this story, Twice Upon a Time. But it is a direct continuation of where we left off in the series finale, you know, after the whole Cybermen debacle, et cetera, Master debacle. And so, apparently so, at the end of what we previously saw, the Doctor did take a fatal blow in that previously aired story, and he's just, you know, sustaining himself, kind of holding back from his regeneration. And as the cliffhanger was previously seen, he, for whatever reason, materializes in some icy landscape facing someone who appears to be his first incarnation. And we kind of pick up the story from there. And we have a bit of a different, a bit of an odd two Doctor story. Not only because it's a multi-Doctor story, as we've seen before in New and Classic Who, but to further add to the situation is the current incarnation of the 12th or 13th, however you want to count them, Doctors. He wants to end his life. He wants to not regenerate again. And he's facing his first self, his younger self, his original self, who is at a time in that self's life where it does not want, the original Doctor does not want to regenerate for his first time. So he is also staving off regeneration, because he wants to stay his original, whereas the current wants to stave off regeneration to become the final, or the ultimate, or the last. And so then you have this strange dichotomy of the older self interacting with the younger self, and seeing if perhaps both could learn something from the other. And then we have this weird story that they embark on, this weird adventure. I don't know.
Well, I don't, you sound disappointed, but I don't know. I really enjoyed this story a lot, mainly because I've seen the first Doctor episode. What's his name? I'm sorry.
David Bradley is the actor.
No, not the actor, the original actor.
William Hartnell.
Yes, Hartnell. I've seen those. I've seen all of his, and
oh,
it was
all
just
his stories.
Well, the ones that are available.
So you've seen The 10th Planet?
I think so.
that which was his final story.
Because I made it up to Troughton, I think.
I don't know.
I made it up to Pertwee.
Oh, so you watched from the beginning all the way to Pertwee. So then you saw the original last episode of the first
Doctor. But at the time, I didn't realize that was what was happening, I think. Or I forgot. It's been a while.
I mean, it's understandable you wouldn't realize, but then you would have to see that he dies, and then in the next episode, he's a completely different person.
I think I saw that, and I don't think I thought anything of it because you explained to me what had happened.
Okay, all right.
I think that's why it wasn't a big deal to me. Okay. However, and I don't remember this particular last episode of him dying, but I like the way, I just like the way they inserted that first Doctor and this current Doctor together to have him with an entirely different actor, and that actor be so good that he's so similar to Hartnell. And it was just like a perfect love letter to the fans to me. And it was a lot of fun. It was the old Doctor saying outdated, inappropriate things that were funny. And I also really enjoyed what Sherlock's brother was on this. Gatiss, is that was his name?
Yeah.
Mark was in this. And I also really liked that there wasn't a bad guy in this story. Because after you realize it, yeah, there was a whole mystery going on. There wasn't necessarily a bad guy to be conquered and killed. And that was interesting. And it was just an exploration of self, an exploration of what is self, be it memories or a flesh self. Who are you? Are you the same person that you were back in the day that you are now? Yes and no. What is time? It was just like a really great episode to me. I think it might be my favorite Christmas special next to, well, I have to revisit that, but because it's fresh in my mind, I'm going to say it's my favorite. So there, happy times.
Carl, where are you at on this story?
I'm kind of with Kat in terms of the sentimental connection between the old footage, the original Doctor. I really like David Bradley's portrayal of the original Doctor. So to see the footage and, you know, them going from what, 3-4 screen, blowing it out to the 16 was an emotional kind of connection and a touchstone with what it was. I like seeing multiple TARDIS.
Yeah!
And them joking around about the obvious changes that have occurred to the internals, externals. It was just fun. It was really, really just fun. I agree with Kat about the lack of bad guy. Even the Doctor seemed confused. Yeah. And I thought that was really a funny moment. He was like, wait a minute, this isn't evil. I don't know what to do when it's not evil. And that really made the episode more about the Doctor's growth. You know, it wasn't about some gimmicky, feeble villain that they had to, you know, band together to try to thwart. It really was more about the Doctor's and, of course, you know, the broader Christmas themes of evolution and change and growth and forgiveness and peace and all of that. You know, it was fun and emotional that was what was at the heart of this. So Capaldi, he's my third favorite Doctor. And
Who are your first two?
Baker and Tennant. But yeah, I really like Tennant. But I don't think that he got enough in the series. His stories have been hit and miss. When they were great, they were really, really great, and I love seeing him in it. But then there were a lot of dogs, and it just broke my heart because I really, really like Capaldi. From the beginning, I like Capaldi as Doctor Who, and I feel like they've missed some real opportunities with him. So, you know, I was a little worried about this episode.
And it was a little lighter than I expected it to be in some ways. But on the other side, it was such a solid and an emotional Christmas special for The Who. And it wasn't corny. It wasn't campy. It really, you know, every time I thought it was going to go in a direction that was a little bit hokey, they really touched on some big, powerful themes. And even the, you know, the captain's story of that moment when they were in the trenches during World War I. Of course, I knew the story about Silent Night, and I'd known that historically. And so for them to bring that in effectively.
Oh, that was nice.
It was nice. It really held the theme of what Christmas was about, and still it gave us a great time to say goodbye to the doctors, and of course a curtain call for many of our favorite characters of this season. So you know, it was light and it was fun. I liked it. I liked it.
All right.
But I'm thinking.
Do it, Eric. Do it.
Eric is a classic Who fan who has been through the wars and the history and the nitty gritty of the Doctor. I'm thinking he might not have been as impressed with this final episode for Capaldi.
Lay it down.
What did you think, Eric? What did you think?
Well, I'll say this about Twice Upon a Time. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad story. That said, I don't know. Certainly not my favorite Christmas special, that's for sure. But certainly
which
not
one
worse.
Was?
That's,
which one
I'd have to sit down and think. But my instincts tell me that what it has been for quite a few years now, A Christmas Carol, to me, is the best Christmas story of Doctor Who. But easily, still. Although I can't remember the title of it now, how bad am I? But Eleven's regeneration episode / story is another very strong one for me for Christmas specials. But I didn't really think about it as much as a Christmas special as far as ranking it. I thought of it more as a Doctor regeneration episode in terms of where I ranked it, you know, compared to other things. And it's, I mean, again, it's not bad, but I think I made this remark on Twitter after watching it, which is in the modern era, post 2005, I think I teared up in every single regeneration story of the modern era, except this one. So to me, that has to mean something. I don't know what, but it means something. If they all hit that mark before this one. So that's something to think for me to think about. And then other than that, okay. Another way I feel about this episode is, I don't know if you guys remember what is perhaps the first charity episode, mini-sode, TARDIS-ode that they made way back when. You may or may not remember. Was it the first?
Yeah, because wasn't the one, it was like 7 minutes, and I made the remark that was the best 7 minutes a man ever gave me or something. I was so pumped up about it.
Yeah, but I'm not sure which one you're talking about, but it was like around 7 minutes or so. But the one I'm thinking of firstly is, it was one called Time Crash, which was actually, it probably isn't the first, but it happened during Tenet's time, and it happened in between season 3 and the Voyage of the Damned episode. Like,
we're not talking about the same thing.
Actually, there was some other ones before this one, but this one I was speaking of is the one where the ship just crashed into the TARDIS. I mean, the Titanic crashed into the TARDIS. And then Tenant Doctor's there. And then all of a sudden, Fifth Doctor appears. And they have this little mini episode that...
Oh, this is the one that I'm talking about.
5 or 6 minutes.
You're talking about Time Crash?
Yes.
Exactly. Okay, all right. Uh-huh.
That's, yes. What do you say,
and Time Crash... I'm just making Crash, sure. I didn't Time know. Crash is great. I loved it. It was amazing at the time. Watched it over and over again. And that's great. This story felt like something like Time Crash to me, except like stretched out to an hour 15 or whatever it is in runtime. Mm-hmm. Which is okay, but
I see what you're saying now. I see. Okay.
It's like, I see your disappointment. Great idea, this great concept. Is it going to be cool for these two to interact? Yeah, yeah. And yes, we have the armistice bit to tie in, which ties into the Christmas angle, and it is a little bit of a touching thing too. And a lot of this episode is a combination of a love letter to the 12th Doctor, of course, but it's also another general love letter to the series as a whole, similar to how the 50th anniversary story was.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely felt
that. Which is fine. I got no problems with that, but that's just what it is. And there's a lot of poignancy and nice moments, but it just is what it is. And I don't dislike it, but other episodes that I think of as great episodes, whether they're regeneration stories or not, they had those elements, but then they had other things. They also had, this is funny, I mean, because this is, I'm kind of going to use Carl's argument of how he was bashing Blade Runner 2049 not too long ago. But I needed more quote unquote plot, the way Carl means it. And I needed more story and more engaging action and happenings and things that, as Carl puts it, I needed more of that to make this a more fully rounded out Doctor Who story. Now, that's not always essential in Doctor Who, because one of my favorite examples of that, an episode that doesn't have that meaty plot, but it's still good anyway, is the Vincent and the Doctor story, the Van Gogh episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's an episode which really is light on plot, so to speak. It basically has a throwaway plot, but yet it still has an emotional core and has a very interesting. Yeah, yeah, very interesting. Many people agree, some disagree with that appraisal of that one. So in that case, it works fine. But in this case, this was a great little, like I said, a charity TARDISode that was stretched out. Wasn't bad. I don't dislike it. It was just fine, though. It was just fine. And I, you know, I got all the little throwbacks and the little reverence for the show and the character, and that was all good. And it had the prerequisite, oh, here were his companions.
I thought that was cool.
It was nice, but it was just, I don't know.
To me, it felt like, you know, Carl, when Deep Space Nine went back to TOS.
Yes.
It felt like that.
It felt like part of that. You know what I mean? It didn't feel as wow as that. But I enjoy going into the old TARDIS. I enjoy the old meets the new. I enjoyed seeing Bill again. Bill, not Bill, but actually Bill.
Wait, you mean Bill, not Bill, actually Bill?
It was Memory Bill, not Bill. Bill, actually Bill. It's true. Because she was a construct from the dying memory of Bill.
Right, but she wasn't Bill.
But she was Bill, but then she wasn't Bill. That's why I said it the way I said it.
Yeah, she's right with Bill, not Bill, because she is a construct, but it actually was she was a memory. Okay. And the memory is all that matters.
Yes, yeah, Bill, not Bill.
We've lost Eric.
Okay. I mean, it was like he's broken right now. Okay.
Broke Eric. No, the way she originally I heard it was that, at some point this is the real Bill.
No. But
in memory only, not ever the real Bill.
That's what I said. Anyway, I enjoyed that. I think my favorite part of this was that there was no bad guy. I think it got away with gotten in the way of the conflict the 12th Doctor had about leaving and the conflict about the first Doctor that we didn't know about, that we're discovering something, You know, it felt like we were looking into a bit of the past that we never got before. And I just thought that was kind of cool to kind of retcon a story that way to now it's the original way that it went down. It was timey-wimey. And then, of course, I remember about the Christmas Silent Night thing, and I forgot that that was, like, I've never read it before, but I remember hearing about it, and to see them do this, and then it'd be, to do that, and it'd be so sweet, and it'd be a nice, just something to see on a battlefield, in addition to that being a Lethbridge steward, if I said that stewardlet, whatever. I thought that was super cool. Like, hey, that's really nice for that family line to have, you know, accompanied the doctor through time. That's cool. It wasn't major, but it was, you know, it was enjoyable.
Yeah. There were so many of those doctor stories where, you know, not quite the companion, but the person that they meet is confronted with a life or death choice, and they have to take the noble death. You know, we've seen that a lot of times. And so for the Christmas special, to just, you know, just have them win one was kind of nice. I thought that was light and fun.
I didn't think the regeneration was original at all.
No, I wasn't as emotionally moved by that either. I'll give you that, Eric, because, you know, as much as I liked Capaldi and I did not want to see him go, I didn't feel it in the regeneration scene. I didn't feel it.
Nothing feels like David Tennant, because that David Tennant took me by surprise, and I was heartbroken.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the one.
Yeah, he did not want to go. I mean, literally, he didn't want to go.
Man, that was rough. That was a rough time for me.
Yeah,
you're right. That one was big because Tennant was who he was. I mean, the biggest actor at the time to play the Doctor of the modern times, but I'm probably biased since 11 was my favorite Doctor, and that one ripped me to shreds.
I didn't feel it for that.
But again, I'm biased because he's my favorite Doctor, and so his getting up to the actual regeneration scene, oh my gosh, it like ripped me apart.
Only thing I remember about him regenerating is that he was talking to a Cyberman head
the whole time. Very Shakespearean, you know, like Yurik.
I don't know. That one felt powerful to me. I mean, just
you know what, Carl, I never got that until you just said it right now. Ever.
Oh. Yeah, there you go.
Damn it. That, now it makes it even more annoying.
Well, I could have said it was like Lex, so that'll really mess with you. But
Jesus
we'll move
Christ,
on.
Would you stop it? So,
in its own way, to me, it was like the Tennant one, where the Smith one, he also, in his own way, really, really didn't, or at least it was portrayed like he really, really didn't want to let go of the character either, or his life, or his incarnation. And, I don't know. Again, maybe it's because I'm a Smith fanboy. It was powerful. It was. And I did not feel that way about Capaldi as much as I like him. And it wasn't really played that way either, which is fine, though. I mean, it doesn't need to be.
I'm just trying to figure out how old is Capaldi and why he has so much hair. Really? Like, I feel like his hair is longer than he has a literal afro. And he looks good with it.
It's quite stylish.
I love his hair.
I don't see what the problem is.
Like, there's no problem with his hair. I just love it. It's like, you know, usually, like, he has no relationship in his genetic code for baldness at all. And I was just like, how is that a thing for you? I don't know. It just feels like, well, how old is he? Do we know? In real life?
It's unknown.
Well, I'm just impressed with the head of hair that he has, man. That's impressive. But
He is 59.
He's 50? What? I didn't realize he was that old. Wait, he's not even 60? You said because he's 59, right? Sorry. I had a little wine, but math is hard. No, I'm kidding.
But I also don't see why all 59-year-olds have to be bald. I mean,
well, I'm just saying it's just surprising
I wish it wasn't the case, but it's gone.
Well, I'm just saying it happens in my family, so I don't know.
And that's part of the joke too, that Peter Capaldi is older than William Hartnell was when William Hartnell was playing the Doctor, and that's part of, like...
Oh, yeah.
Right. Hartnell felt like he was 74.
I know.
Nutrition people matters.
People age different, you know, back in the day.
Thank you for that.
Right, but I mean, because Hartnell was like, what? I'm trying to do the math real quick. He was 54?
Shut up.
When he was at the end of his time as the Doctor?
Wow.
54? God. That dude seemed like he was not 54. He seemed like he was 74. And then I think because Capaldi has such long hair, you want him to be, I don't know. He's just astonishing to me. And I liked him as a Doctor. I want to see what he does next. I want to watch him in everything.
You mean maybe. Peter Capaldi?
Oh yeah, he's gonna.
What
be
did
great.
I say?
Well, I'm
sorry.
I just want to clarify.
Well, I'm just saying I really liked him
because you should really watch him in the thick of it. That series.
What was the one where they said that he was a person who cursed all the time?
The thick of it.
Oh, that's what that is. Okay, because I want to watch that.
No,
but
it's really good.
Okay, I didn't know what it was called, so I never bothered to whatever. But
yeah, he plays like a super curmudgeon. Sort of.
But really? Oh, I love Cranky Men. Cranky old men are my favorite. But so to me, the regeneration. So the problem I had with the regeneration was why, if he regenerated in his TARDIS, didn't it blow up? You know what I mean? And then what was the whole thing? When we saw like the preview and the reveal of the Doctor, and the Doctor was coming out of the forest or whatever, I wanted to see that and how that happened. And we just got her falling out of a burning TARDIS or whatever. And so it was kind of a disconnect from the reveal a few months ago.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
The reveal
right.
of her versus.
I just felt like they're doing what they seem to just be doing all the time, at least in the new show, especially.
What is, which
I
is
mean because when 9 turned to 10, there was a moment of grace, meaning nothing crazy happening. But then all of a sudden, the Doctor, he did it himself, but plummets into like a new story, and the TARDIS is taking him somewhere important as soon as he's brand new Tennant. And then when Tennant turned to Smith, obviously like the same type of calamity happened. With the regeneration, which was like, why is the TARDIS blowing up and going on fire and careening through the sky above London, the same as it did with 12 as well? And then I don't know why. You asked the question, I'm like, the only thing I can think of is because they just keep doing it. But that's, I don't know why they keep doing it either. Because it has to be exciting.
It seems like the Doctor should at least land the thing before it does that.
Yeah,
it just
in the old days, he would just regenerate, and there he is, and here we
I know.
Are.
Why can't it be like Hartnell, just lay on the floor and do the shit? Like, why the fuck are we?
All the classic regenerations, it's
blowing stuff up.
In all the new ones, it's just like, oh, but we have to top.
They don't top them.
They get more lightning bolts from one to the next.
Well, but
so
the whole thing with what was it, David Tennant's, is that if you regenerate inside of the TARDIS, it explodes and
it absorbs.
I thought he destroyed it and they had to build a new TARDIS. Therefore, in the future, we were not going to regenerate in the TARDIS, but his Capaldi's regeneration did not look different from any other generation, so I'm trying to figure out why we had the regeneration that was like for was it Tennant or 11? Why was his so deadly and traumatic, and how was this one not?
Yeah, the only thing I'm guessing is we've already established that the Doctor is bending the rules with his regenerations now. You know, each time he regenerates now, he's pulling some kind of force power from, like, this latest one. He got the tear power from the water being when he was supposed to be dead. So I'm thinking, you know, between pulling the core of all space-time with Donna first, and then Brooke and Clara, and then now we got him pulling, you know, a life force from water alien. That, you know, I'm thinking that these latter ones are pushing the standard of regeneration technology, and he's having some breaker problems.
Know, why does he have to do it the way he's been doing it? I want something different because it looks the same all of the time, and then I was just like, oh, he's doing it in the TARDIS again. Oh, the TARDIS is on fire again. Oh, man.
I have no good explanation for it because, honestly, I think it's a bad idea, too.
I think should do it in a DeLorean, and when the lightning hits him, then all of a sudden he's the new. You know, Christopher Lloyd would make a pretty darn good Doctor.
I agree.
That might be able to squeeze that in.
So I'm pretty excited for, oh God, I was gonna call her Jody Watley.
not quite.
Oh my God. Yeah, how much wine have I had? What's her name again?
Kind of lover.
What's her name again, Eric?
Whitaker?
The new dog.
Whitaker, Jody, right. Whitaker. So she is Jody. I had the Jody part right. So I'm excited for her. And I want to, I know we're going to have the, oh, I have boobs. You know, this is weird jokes. So I hope we go through those really fast. And I'm excited to see what she does.
I'm looking forward to it. I wanted the next Doctor to be a woman, actually.
I'm sad because she's not Ginger. Like, they could have gotten that out of the way.
That would have been a nice her. Stick of the hat there. Yeah.
But,
I'm curious to see what they're going to do.
Now, if she would have been Karen Gillan, that would have been cool.
Yeah, done with her.
That would have worked.
No, I mean, the actress Karen Gillan.
Yeah, no, I'm done. I'm good. I don't need her to be the Doctor. The only one that I wanted to be the Doctor was perhaps Clara, and they blew that away, and now I'm pissed and jaded. So,
but see, I'm not saying Clara be the Doctor. But I'm saying I'm not saying Amelia be the Doctor. I'm saying the Doctor assume the physicality of Amelia, not Amelia be the Doctor. You're saying you wanted Clara to be the Doctor. No, I don't want Amy to
that's
be the Doctor.
I meant the same thing that you mean.
Did you?
I meant the same thing you meant, Eric. Oh, so you
just wanted the Doctor to appear like Clara but not be Clara.
Right.
Okay, I did not take that from what you said.
No, that's what I meant, sir. You just, no. Eric, I'm bothered by you right now because you just don't seem so excited, man. And I'm not accustomed, like, you haven't been excited about Doctor Who for a few years now. And I'm just, are you okay? Like, what's going on with you?
He's just still heartbroken from Matt Smith. No, he's lost Matt Smith and has no love since then that matches.
I mean, because I say this a lot, but I missed the Eric that would stop and pause previews and would analyze I miss that Eric so much. That was my favorite Eric.
There's a reason why that feels real and genuine when it happens. Because to me, it's unrealistic. I mean, other people may be like this, but for me, it's unrealistic. There's no way that mode of being can just be and just stay at that level or remain constant. To me, that's completely unnatural. And if that's where the way I would be with Doctor Who or anything, I would feel then that was being dishonest because it's just not natural. And what I mean by not natural, I don't just mean from like a human standpoint, but the same for like the show, this show or any show, there's always highs and lows, peaks and valleys in the quality or the engagement of the stories or whatever. And it's very, to me, it's unrealistic to just have this upward slope or this high level of greatness that just, like, that's completely unrealistic and unnatural. And I always feel it's a bad idea or a bad ideal to strive for. because it's what I said was not good with Doctor Who Revival Series 1 going to 2 to 3 to 4, is that they had this... It worked well for the first two seasons, like, let's keep topping ourselves and getting bigger, and every finale has to be more, has to have more emotional weight than last year's, and again, and again, and they kept doing it, and it's unsustainable, because it's just trying to make the same thing bigger and crazier and bad. You can't just throw money at and just make it bigger.
Yeah, but like you can't just throw money at and make it bigger, but you can't always make it the same either. It's like they go big or they literally stay the same. They never go home.
You're right. But I felt this was different than the other regeneration, which is fun, which is a good thing. I also feel it was low key, which I'm okay with that. It doesn't all, that's what I'm trying to say. It doesn't have to all be
it was low key, but it would look the same. I wanted to like.
You're just talking about the physical regeneration itself.
Yeah, the hand out, the arms, and the TARDIS. And I'm just like, I want to see her creep out of the forest and not see the regeneration and maybe have a weird story or something come back. I really was intrigued with that first appearance in the. Okay, sorry. Well, I don't
know. No, I mean, no, that's fine. I mean, for me, I don't want that. But that's just my personal preference.
Fine.
No, I mean, can't no, let I'm me not have my fun. Have that. I'm just saying that, like.
Do you think that Jodie Whittaker could be your favorite doctor next to Matt Smith and not counting pre
Eccleston? I don't think it has anything to do with Jodie Whittaker. Herself personally. I mean, I always feel that potential can exist at any time there has ever been a regeneration. I have never gone into any regeneration, and my first that I experienced was from 5 to 6. And from that was my first one, and then I've obviously experienced everyone since. I never thought that, oh, no one's going to top Baker for me, or no one's going to top so-and-so, and or this one, I've always had an open mind for every incoming new doctor, and I've always had like a more or less blank slate type of approach to the new doctor, whoever they were, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, etc. So my answer to your question would be the same, regardless of which regeneration you're talking about, which is, of course, there's always the potential. Just like with Matt Smith, when he was in this position, first taking over, there was nothing about him initially that said to me, oh, guess what? This guy could be your favorite. No, it was just like, wow, okay, he's obviously different. I saw nothing special in Matt Smith at the end of the Tenet episode where he changed into Matt Smith. Nothing at all. And I'd seen interviews of Matt Smith, the actor, and I thought, okay, he's a quirky guy, but that doesn't mean anything. No, I knew there was potential, but I had no idea. There's nothing that, oh, something about him speaks to me. No, not at all. Yeah. I didn't really know until we were.
That's the most unfun answer to that ever, Eric.
The truth is not always fun. The truth is always. So yeah, I mean, of course she may, but the only thing that I noticed about her in her short, brief time on screen. As the character, finally, and maybe this is just a random weird remark, her facial expressions and the way she was just acting in those short moments, I got this weird vibe of she seemed like, she looked, seemed, and felt like a female David Tennant to me.
Yeah, just, I see it.
There was similar facial reactions that it reminded me of him when he was like, kind of feeling his mouth out. It sounds worse than it is. And and that was just a weird thought, but I mean, there's not much else to hang your hat on.
Okay. I'm excited about it. And
it really depends how they, and we'll see, how they set up her character. You know, her attributes, her traits, you know, because, you know, she probably,
I'm looking forward to the potential of her, but one thing that, you know, again, we haven't seen a whole lot of her, so, you know, we don't know what to expect, But the one thing that I thought was a little disappointing or surprising, what's she wearing? What in the world do they have her wearing?
She wore a tattered version of what Peter Capaldi was wearing.
But I have a feeling that they're going to try to carry that through.
They're not. She's going to pick her own clothes.
I hope not.
See, I wasn't sure what Carl was talking about, but now I know.
Because
it's already, for those who want to see, it's already out there. It's been out there for weeks now.
You're talking about the clothes, right?
The costume for her doctor.
Right. Look.
That's what I was saying. I wasn't sure if he was talking about that or the tattered thing.
No, I'm talking about her doctor outfit. Okay. What bothers me about this?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, the thing is I always thought. The first thing is, if you're going to have doctor as a woman, the first thing is, I thought Capaldi was the coolest looking doctor. I mean, in terms of his outfit, what he was wearing.
And his hair. Trim or,
I'm talking about his outfit. The doctors have had different sort of looks as they've gone on.
What you're saying.
Baggy suit and whatnot. But the point is if you're going to have a woman as a doctor, I was really hoping for something fierce. I mean, I always liked Rivers' looks. Every look that Rivers showed up with.
What the hell is this?
Looking. What are you talking about, Rivers? Okay. Song,
what are these suspenders and
culottes? Oh, you're looking at it. Okay, see, this is what I'm talking about.
What is this?
So when they finally got us a woman as the doctor, I was expecting that
girl by
the clothing design for River was going to finally stand up and she's going to like, we're going to do this. And that's not what I am seeing.
What the hell is this?
So that was the proper response in terms of so I'm sure she's going to be fantastic, but the outfit.
I'm going to write somebody a letter.
The outfit is not,
because that's not working for me.
That's not what I hope for. But when you look at it, you can see why. It's clearly little bits of all of the doctor's outfits before. You can see every doctor influence before. I get it.
I don't need that.
No, and you could have done that. I mean, Kat, come on, you're a designer. I know if somebody turned to you and said, I want you to come up with an outfit that integrates some element from all of the previous doctors for a woman, go. No, you would be able to come up with something really. Her outfit, I was hoping for something different, but not about
that. I don't have such strong feelings or thoughts.
I have no idea why.
About her outfit.
I really have no idea why you would say that. That is, you should have some strong feelings about it.
No, because I saw it and I was like, okay, it is what it is. I'm sure I'm sure it'll look different. In an episode. Secondly, I'm sure it'll be no different than like 11 and 12, wherein they had their premiere costumes, which both evolved dramatically during their time.
I hope so.
Evolved's not even the right word, because they basically completely changed.
I hope so.
During their, and I would be shocked if her outfit didn't drastically changed.
I'm still writing a damn letter.
That's all I'm saying.
But as far as this being her initial outfit, I don't really have any qualms about it. I mean, I'll say on the plus side for me personally, you're right, it does incorporate all these elements, which I'm not really a fan of that conceptually. Like, I don't feel like that's necessary in any way to incorporate everything. But fine, you did it. But on a plus side, though, what I kind of like about it.
Please, Eric, what do you like about it?
What I do like is because it really, forget about Doctor Who, it very much harkens back to some casual styles of the 1960s, and it's bringing it back in a weird quirky way, I guess. But I'm not averse to that, is what I'm saying, because I'm always interested in those costumes. And I don't just mean Doctor Who, I just mean in general. Those costumes, I mean what people wore, contemporary fashion of the 1960s. And you don't really see that particular era come back too much. The way style always comes back. Lately, you more see, like, the 70s have come back multiple times since the 70s. 80s as well. The 90s were already a comeback of previous things before them. And the 60s, not so much here and there. And so, I don't know. It's interesting to me in that aspect. You know, it's not an obvious choice or direction to go in. But I am interested in seeing that. Because I always thought that fashion was kind of interesting. And so I'd like to see if it works.
This is the most passionate thing that he has ever talked about on this particular episode about Doctor Who.
Well, this is not even in this episode. I mean, this is...
Well, about the new anything. And I'm taken aback.
I get how Carl Capaldi's the coolest. It's pretty dapper. But
and functional.
In terms of cool, though, and functional in a way, Christopher Eccleston. I think his is a dark horse choice. I always appreciated his outfit as a Doctor outfit. It's simplicity, but very cool and functional. And
we are talking about Christopher Eccleston.
Yes,
my baby. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a great... That to me is arguably the coolest outfit. As far as cool, when I say cool, I mean like Fonzie. Cool, like that, I think.
Hey!
Because cool could be taken many different ways, so.
No, just let it go. All right. Well, did we do that? Are we done?
You know, and I mean, and also for this episode, it's obviously not just an ending of the Capaldi era, as it were. It's also a conclusion or ending to the Moffat era, which
here we go.
In that sense, I think this is good enough for that. It serves that purpose. Detractors will detract on these aspects, which is, I mean,
somebody on Twitter just said she looked like Mork from Mork and Mindy.
That was said like within 4 seconds of when they posted the image.
And until somebody just said it, yeah, that's exactly what that looks like. I'm unhappy. I'm sorry, Eric. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Detractors will say this is more bad about Stephen Moffat. it was again like an amalgam of all the things that he's been redoing throughout his run in Doctor Who as a writer and as a showrunner. So haters are going to hate that. And fans of Moffat are going to be okay with it. It's a very much an homage to Moffat and his style. He tries to sort of have deprecating humor against his own. I mean, because it has all the witty comments that you expect. The whole thing about the memory ghost things, the memory facsimiles, it's right, if somebody, another person, was trying to make an homage to a Moffat episode and try to like copy his style, this would be a good example of that. Twice Upon a Time, because the whole idea of the memory facsimiles, it's right out of his wheelhouse. It's right out of his playbook. The whole Silence in the Library and River being saved digitally, you know, he loves doing that whole cheating death thing some way, somehow, with like a digital copy. He's rehashing old ideas, which some people hate. I don't think it's the end of the world. Yeah, I don't mind it. I mean, yeah, the old TARDIS was cool, but it's kind of like the third time we've seen it now. And so that is a bit much going back to the well for me.
Wow, Eric.
They only did Trials and Tribulations once. Wouldn't it have been weird if they did it a second time?
Okay, you're right. Fine.
They actually did in the Next Generation, but still, yes, it's okay.
The Next Generation?
Calm down, Carl. Mm-hmm.
I don't mean down. Actually Next Generation, but
yeah, just calm down.
But you know, and we, it's still good. It's just like, all right. I mean, it was really big the first time I saw it, and it was really big the second. But I mean, how, you know, it just doesn't go over. And the armistice thing. I mean, that was cool.
It made me shed a tear.
For me, where it worked better, not exactly the same, but along the same lines, the episode with Tennant, Human Nature, Family of Blood, that was the Scarecrow episode in the little town, the little military school. And it was the one where Martha sort of fell in love with David Tennant. And then David Tennant was like, he had gone into human form, remember, and he was a school teacher. And he didn't really understand that he was the doctor. He just felt he was a regular human. And he had to rally the boys in the military school to, like, you know, fight off the Scarecrow, the alien family that was possessing people. And you remember all this?
I remember that one, yes.
And Kat, yeah. And then, and he was kind of like pushing these boys and rallying them and da-da-da-da-da. And then it, at the end of the episode, the doctor goes to present day. And the little boy, or I don't know if it's present day, but it's more closer to present day. And the little boy, you know, I guess he was like a veteran in the Great War or whatever. I can't remember for sure which war. But anyway, the kid ended up going to war. And now he was an old veteran in a wheelchair. And it was Memorial Day, I believe, in England. And the doctor and Martha, then they put like a wreath. Whoa. That whole veteran memorial scene gutted me back way back then. And time since when I revisit that episode. Holy moly. So like that for me set the high mark for that type of emotional impact. And this is very similar to that. Just not as good for me. So.
All right, Eric. We're done with you, man. I mean, you just put a wet blanket over this whole
Wasn't bad. I feel it's fitting. I think it's good. Again, Levin's was more powerful, but I don't want this one to be as powerful or more powerful because that's chasing a dragon. And I no, it's fine to be. It's fine to be low key. It doesn't have to be like overwrought every single time. And it was an okay journey for the doctor. Another thing I felt like about this one, like this reminds me of, I don't know if these things were ever big in America, but they were especially big in England back in the day. And who knows, maybe they still are. I don't know. But in England, it was very popular for there to be like special like Christmas magazines for like Doctor Who or something else, which is like a magazine they sell at holiday times. And, you know, it's like a magazine, just okay. A special edition. And let's say it was a Doctor Who version some year, or they'd have like annuals that they would come out with, Doctor Who annual. And this, what the story, Twice Upon a Time, it felt to me like they would have in these magazines, they'd have like little comics, like panel comics, like they'd only be like 4 or 5 pages long in the magazine or something. And it would be like this nice little concise Doctor Who tale. And it'd be like very poignant. And this felt like reading a magazine and going, oh, wow. Oh, this is such a nice little Doctor Who. Oh, it's touching. And like, oh, like that's so good. And like, I like that. That was, you know, it was like, excuse me.
Choking on your bullshit.
Had a Christmas to it. And they tied it into the holiday. That's great. And so someone took that little thing out of the magazine and made it into a full hour 15 minute long episode, which
way to be a letdown of a story, dude.
So from that description it sounded like it should have been good, but it was not.
But again, it was a nice concise tale, but it's okay. I guess we could make this something big.
Okay, so now that Eric has pissed in my Cheerios about this Doctor Who Regeneration Christmas special.
Well, I liked it, damn it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it. I thought it was good.
I liked it too.
We were unconvinced.
I liked it. It was fine.
Oh my god. Okay, well, final thoughts about said tale. Not you, Eric, because those were your final thoughts, sir. I'm cutting you off.
Yeah, no, I've said all I've had to say. Yes, I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. I look forward to seeing what Jodie Whittaker brings to the role. I want to know what her companion is going to be like, because that's going to be fun. I never got the whole Stephen Moffat hate and R.D., whatever his name, R.T.D. I never understood the hate for those guys, whatever. Chris, I think, is going to do a fine job. You know, I'm just...
That's what I'm most interested in about going forward, is Chris Chibnall and his vision and his style in Doctor Who in particular. That's what I'm very... Because that's going to be, to me, much probably more defining of the show going forward than even Jodie Whittaker being the Doctor or yada, yada, yada. That, like, who knows how long Chris Chibnall will be at the reins of Doctor Who.
Do you have faith in him?
I don't. I always keep, like, an open mind, open slate going to things.
Okay.
But whatever, however, that's what I'm most interested in finding out, because whether he runs for 3 years or 6 years or whatever, that's really what's going to define the show for better or for worse. So I'm just interested in seeing that.
Because they already making bad decisions with costume choice. Okay, sorry, Eric.
No, but if you look at that image too, you'll see that publicity image. You'll see even the TARDIS looks different as well.
It's smaller on the outside.
It had a minor slight makeover as well.
I couldn't see the TARDIS for that damn outfit. But, you know, maybe they'll do something. Who knows?
I'd like to see her have, like, some kind of, not every week, but, you know, like, some cool... I'm really into, like, braids and French braids right now and different types of things.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to end this episode of Sci-Fi Party Line, because I don't know where that's going to go. So that's our show. We love your feedback. You can give us a call, voicemail. We'll play it on the show and not make fun of you. We can be reached at 773-336-2686. You can go to our website, scifipartyline.com, to hear Eric talk about Doctor Who nicely and not like this, because he actually loves the show. You can also go to Mostly Harmless Cutaway to hear us talk about all Doctor Who. We are on Facebook. And we have a discussion group there. We're on Twitter. You can talk to us there. And we hope you enjoyed this show. And we'll see you at the party next time. Bye.
Bye, Duggan.
End of line.